This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. When young kids commit serious crimes, prosecutors have an important decision to make. Keep the case in the juvenile system or try to move it to the adult courts, where penalties are much stiffer. Recently, a Colorado district attorney faced that decision. Last March, Bob Watson got a call about a 12-year-old who shot and killed his parents and injured two of his siblings.
He was in the backyard, you know, had made a setup like a little airport. He had his toy airplanes and his toy trucks. And he literally went from that, sitting there playing in the dirt with his toys, to going into the house and committing this act.
In the end, the DA, Bob Watson, decided to keep the case in juvenile court. And the boy got 7 years recently in a plea deal. Watson's going to talk to us about how he came to that decision shortly. The murders took place in the small town of Burlington, 140 miles east of Denver. Relatives of victims Charles and Marilyn Long say the sentence is too short. Wally Long, the boy's uncle, is now caring for the two siblings who were injured.
My hope all along had been that he would, to be honest with you, he'd be transferred to adult court and basically be in prison the rest of his life. To me, that seems a just sentence for what he did.
And not just as punishment, Long says, but as a way to protect the brother and sister he injured.
I was never wanting to see him do life in prison just for the sake of punishment. I mean, I've worked in a correctional facility for 20 years and just recently retired. And so I know what prison can do to even a decent person. My main purpose for a longer sentence was that these children would be adults when he got out, so they would be better able to handle the situation.
Now, the motive for the killings remains a mystery, and there's no evidence the child was abused. Again, Wally Long.
So far, we've not had any indication of what caused it, what's wrong with him. It's hard for me to imagine that it's something so deep and, I guess, evil that it can't be fixed, because he was, you know, from all indications, he was a great kid. He was to us when we saw him last, and he seemed fairly normal in every respect.
Long doesn't buy the idea that the boy didn't understand what he was doing.
We've raised six children. My youngest is 13. I mean, he knows exactly what the consequences of killing and murder are. He knows that when somebody's dead, they're dead. And it's hard for me to imagine a 12-year-old not knowing or understanding that if I pull this trigger and shoot this person, that they're going to die.
Well, let's talk to the prosecutor now. The district attorney for Burlington, Bob Watson, had a big decision to make. Keep the kid in the juvenile system where a 7-year sentence was the max, or try to get the case transferred to adult court. In some cases, prosecutors can make that decision themselves, but this boy was so young, 12 years old, that it would have required a judge's ruling. I asked Watson why he didn't push to have the boy transferred to adult court.
That's a question a lot of people have. Have to understand what my role is. My role is not to act with whatever I think should happen or what my emotions may tell me is a proper thing. I am the elected constitutional officer to represent the interests of the people of the state of Colorado. So I have to look at all the evidence that I have and try to determine what would be the right legal conclusion that I can draw. So in a case like this, I made it very clear that I wasn't going to make that decision until I had everything that I could possibly consider. First part, of course, would be the investigation itself. I went to the scene that night, worked very closely with the Burlington Police Department, the Colorado Bureau of Investigation, and our own investigators. That part of the case went fairly quickly. We determined early on there wasn't a question of who did it. And we were able to pretty well determine how it was done. And, of course, then everybody wants to know the why, and that's a much harder question. I needed to collect the stuff that the statute talks about, and it talks about things like school records, medical records, psychological records. Those didn't exist. This is a case involving a 12-year-old homeschooled boy who had no medical records. So a lot of things that we'd normally consider simply weren't there, and we were somewhat shooting in the dark. We immediately decided that we needed to look outside. For example, I sent an email out to even Archbishop Chaput. I figured that the church has a long history deciding what age we're going to hold people accountable for their actions under the doctrine of age of reason.
Was this a Catholic family?
No, they weren't Catholic.
And
I'm not Catholic myself. I just simply thought that they would have access to some of the historical bases that I wanted to consider. He put me in contact with a couple of people, one of whom was a PhD ethicist. So I submitted my concerns to him, and he gave me some very good feedback, I thought, very helpful.
And this is all while you're weighing. Should this stay in juvenile court or not?
Absolutely. You know, again, I want to make the decision based on everything that I can possibly gather. We'd also looked, and we'd found one national expert in the matter of parricide, which is when you commit murder against both parents. As you can probably imagine, that's a pretty rare situation. It's even rarer when you have a situation where not only were parents killed, but there was assaults against younger siblings. And that's almost unheard of in this. So we sought out the experts that we could find to try to give us some more information. In this case, we relied on Dr. Kathleen Heide from the University of South Florida, who has written several books on the subject, and she's pretty much the national expert on it. We went down to Florida. She gave us some things to look at as well. Came back. We're still, you know, wrestling with that decision. At this point, I have very little to go on. I have the horror of the crime, and there's no doubt that this is probably the most serious type of offense that you can imagine any juvenile being involved in. Normally how things would work in a case like this, if a typical just criminal trial, you know, the prosecution, our side, we work our case, the defense does their case, we don't talk in the middle. You know, that's what we do for trial. It's the, you know, the battle is in the courtroom. This was a case that we finally sat out and told him, I said, look, you need to help us understand.
Because we're in something of an information vacuum.
Right, because, you know, they have a risk as well. You know, if I simply file a transfer hearing and you know, go in and say, Judge, we think you ought to try this young man as an adult, there's a risk the defense could lose. And if they lose at that point, well, now we're looking at a possible life sentence for this young, consecutive life sentences for this young man.
That is for the mother, the father, and potentially for the injury of two children.
That's correct. So they have a risk, and they know that I have to make this discretionary call. We had Dr. Heide travel to Colorado. She did psychological interviewing of the young man. She was able to view the testing conducted by the defense. She's able to interview the family members, immediate and kind of outside immediate. And from that, we had a 50-plus page report from her, and then we also had the defense psychologist reports. So then it gave me the tools I needed to do to say, all right, now I can make that call.
And what was the picture that emerged?
Well, you could think of two different extremes. I only say this to contrast for a young man in a remote area in Burlington and a very secluded life in the home. But if you had, on the one hand, if you had a young man who multiple juvenile records, you know, been convicted in things, he was running with gangs, and he shoots a rival gang member in a drive-by shooting. Well, that's very sophisticated, I guess you will, juvenile delinquent. On this case, though, I had a young man with no history, and certainly no criminal history, no history of violence, nothing had ever been reported. He was a very small-framed little guy. All he did was homeschooled. He would go to work. He actually cleaned buildings, and including the courthouse here in Kit Carson County. And he'd use his money to buy his Legos and computer games. The facts came out that this was a very immature young man, which is a factor that I'm supposed to consider under the statutes. Not all 12-year-olds are created equal. And based on this, looking at all the factors and all the reports, I was fairly convinced that the chances of prevailing in a transfer proceeding or a hearing were pretty low.
In other words, it was not a sure thing that the transfer to adult court would be accepted.
But, no.
But why not just try?
Well, because at that point I would lose the only ability that I had to try to leverage an acceptable disposition to the case. At that point, as long as I still had the possibility of filing for a transfer, well, the defense also has a risk involved.
And what you felt in the end was a better outcome, or a less worse outcome, was a 7-year guarantee with the cards you had in juvenile than all of the risks that come along with adult court.
Well, considering the fact I would never get to, probably would never get to the adult court, that's absolutely correct. It's not that I was happy with the range that I have available, but it was the best, as you say, the worst decisions that I could make. There was no good decision.
to be clear, you eventually had a plea deal in juvenile court for the maximum 7 years.
Yes. I drove to Denver and sat down the public defender in their office and we simply said, this is where we are. You know, if we're going to agree that this will remain in the juvenile court, I have to get a plea of guilty to everything. I have to get the maximum possible sentence that we can get.
Why did you want that?
Anything less would have put at risk whether or not he would get enough rehabilitation or treatment. Again, threats to the community is something we certainly have to look at. And I didn't want to have anything less than the maximum I could get, both to isolate him and to treat him.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and we're talking to District Attorney Bob Watson, who recently prosecuted the case of a 12-year-old boy who murdered his parents in Burlington. This is on the plains, about 140 miles east of Denver. Watson's talking to us about the decision to keep the case in juvenile court rather than request a transfer to an adult court. Well, let's address what I think you see as the larger question here, that there isn't enough flexibility.
That's
right?
Correct.
I mean, really, your choice was 7 years max or the risk of consecutive life sentences.
Right. The law, and which means, of course, society's view on this has swung greatly back and forth over the years. I know that one of the cases in the late 1800s involved a person even younger who was convicted of murder and sent to adult prison because there was no juvenile system. We went from that to creating a very detailed juvenile system, which we found would be inadequate during the summer of violence, and I believe it was 93. So we created this way of that some juveniles can still be done in the adult court.
It's been likened to a pendulum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That name comes up once in a while.
Yes.
The problem is that it still leaves two extremes. Stay a juvenile or you got to go at the adult court.
Well, what's an option you'd like that you didn't have?
The ability to run consecutive sentencing. In other words, I could get a sentence of 7 years for the murder of the father. I could get 7 years for the murder of the mother. That's 14 years there. And then consecutive sentencing for the attempted murders on the other two. And if I could get 5 years on those, so that puts me up at 24 years.
Sticking with the juvenile system.
In part, this is where it keeps the court involved in the system and doesn't just say, here's a sentence, goodbye, we never look at this again. The provisions of the juvenile code already talk about what happens when you hit certain ages. So those provisions would still be there. At age 20 and a half, the Division of Youth Corrections would be required, just like they are now, to file a motion with the court, and that we would have a hearing. And the judge would have then three possible options. One, he could say that the juvenile stays in the juvenile system, but that can only be for another 6 months, age 21. Or he can say the juvenile's done his time, we're going to release him.
There's been a rehabilitation.
Right. He could do it. The third thing he could do is say, no, you have not either been punished enough or rehabilitated enough. We're going to maintain custody of you, and it's going to be in the adult system. So then at that age, once they're now, you know, they're physically an adult, intellectually an adult, they can be transferred to the adult facility to do the rest of whatever the sentence is. Plus, they would be supervised in by adult parole when they are released. These things already exist in the law except for the consecutive sentencing prong. So the solution from my standpoint is simply authorize that by the legislature saying in the statute in cases of class one and maybe class two, first and second degree murder, I mean, that's what we're talking about, all charges within that count can run consecutive.
On that third option where someone who was sentenced in juvenile court does wind up in the adult system, does that violate the spirit of what the juvenile courts were set up to do?
In part. But I don't think the juvenile system's set up to be ignorant of the possible risk to the community. I mean, and I'm not trying to say it applies to this young man. I'm just talking about in general. There are serial killers who started out as young killers. And there are some people who are going to continue to pose a threat to the community. And having a system just automatically says, well, we're going to do one size that fits all. And it doesn't matter if you're like this young man who's never done anything before or you're somebody who's done this multiple times. Is problematical. You just need more options to address particular juveniles in deciding what to do with them.
And this is something you'll lobby for?
You know, I've already drafted some proposed language for that and submitted it to the Colorado District Attorney's Council. We have a legislative committee on that. So it's simply a matter of trying to find a sponsor in the state legislature to carry the bill.
Thank you so much for the picture into this world. We really appreciate it.
Nice to welcome.
Bob Watson is district attorney for the 13th Judicial District. He talked to us about a recent case he prosecuted, a 12-year-old boy in Burlington who killed his parents and injured two siblings. The boy received a 7-year sentence in juvenile court.